Bob. Thanks for joining, man. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing good. It's good to see you. I think the last time I saw you was in, was it Las Vegas at a 1CC class we did?
Yep. In early 2016, I was actually just going to mention that. And that was a good time. I was actually just recently there in Lake Las Vegas again for Digital Water. It's like an Aviva conference, Wonderwear West. They did a Digital Water, which is like all geared towards water and wastewater, customers and technologies. And so, you know, at that time you were developing your VR product already on the Microsoft HoloLens, and I'm really curious to see how the product has grown since then. IQ Agent, right? And then do you still do IQ? What was your integration from?
iQuest.
Okay. iQuest, got it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me explain that. iQuest is a solution provider that I started 22 years ago, and we're still going. So we're an automation solution provider. We do PLC programming, we do SCADA, we have a machine shop, and that's still going. And, I'm still one of the owners, but Patrick Meir and I, who's the other owner, started playing around with iPad 2 when it came out. Mm. And that was really the first device that had a processor that was good, had a camera, had an accelerometer. And we started playing around with that, figuring out what we could do. And we knew that it was going to make it on the plant floor because there was a faster acceptance to technology on the plant floor. And we came up with a concept of IQ Agent, which is really taking up most of my time now. So IQ Agent is my second company. And it's actually augmented reality or mixed reality, depending on what device you're on and who you're talking to. But that's what I'm working on now.
Well, yeah, that's awesome that you're, continuing to work on that project. Because even at the time, 3 years ago, I just remember, how advanced it was for the time, I think. I don't even think AR devices were really out to consumers yet, or VR had just really kind of come onto the scene, and you already had this app and you're really passionate about it, which I thought was really cool. And if there's one thing that I've noticed in the last year is that AR and VR is actually becoming a reality now. It's no longer hype. I think it's coming into where these practical applications are actually starting to make sense and probably have made sense. So I'm curious to see what you're seeing in the market.
Well, you mentioned practical, and one of the taglines we have is practical augmented reality, because I didn't have any competitors 3 years ago at all. Today, I have competitors. We're, as far as I'm concerned, we're still the best, simply because I'm not trying to be the flashiest. There's a lot of really flashy stuff out there. PTC is doing some great stuff, and ThingWorks, and they have some really nice looking stuff. The new HoloLens 2 that Microsoft has come out with, they've even jumped in, and they're selling cloud services for step-by-step procedures and things like that. But where I think that companies like that are kind of missing is the practicalness. I know from being on the plant floor for 30 years that flash doesn't sell, and you have to prove return on investment. So my take has always been, I'm going to use the technology they already have. So if you think, IQ Agent, very simply, what we do is we allow you to point your mobile device at a piece of equipment and instantly get all the information about the equipment. So, live data, schematics, workflow, all that stuff. Well, in an AR world, they want to do object recognition, or they want to do AR tags. Well, if you do an AR tag, you can do some really neat, rigid stuff that looks amazing. But that AR tag has to be compiled into every single scene. So now we have this, this massive custom program. So you think about all the developer time, you think about all the money, there's no ROI there. So
right,
what we do...
probably today it's still probably less efficient to put it on an operator and say, okay, go solve this problem. They'll probably just be, if there's an easy, intuitive mobile app or screen, probably be just quicker time to value, right? Without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we're off the shelf. You can literally take IQ Agent. I've got a video called AR for Your Plant in 20 Minutes, where installing from a clean system, you can create a point of interest, put in make a workflow, put in a video, put in live data points, and see it on four different devices, some of them AR, in literally less than 20 minutes. You can create AR scenes that are global. And we use, we use QR codes for markers. You don't get the rigidity, and you don't get, these powerful, very, very stable graphics. But then again, think about the cost of that. So we anchor directly on the QR code. And really what someone is looking for in an AR application is just to see data that is in context to the real world. You know, I always, for new people, I say, hey, if you watch football, the first down line's yellow. Well, it's not actually yellow on the field. That's augmented reality.
It's AR, yeah. I didn't know that for the longest time, by the way.
Well, the litmus test of a good augmented reality app is the first thought in your mind is it's augmented reality. It's first thought in your mind is, wow, that's really useful. This is a great app, I mean, I've got an F-150 truck that's got a top-down view on the camera so I can see how I'm backing up. People say, well, is there a camera on top of your truck? No, it's interpolated. But it's a very powerful way for me to be able to maneuver my truck around because, and that's also augmented reality.
Yeah. So, well, the phone, the camera on this phone, the hardware hasn't updated in like a few years, but the pictures keep getting better and better each year because of the software. So it's kind of interesting. Yeah. Like, obviously, I still have like full, big cameras and stuff, and they have their purpose with like the lenses. There's physics kind of gets involved there. But I mean, the software, what you can do with this is pretty amazing. Like even the portrait mode, and it's really good now. You can't tell almost.
It's very good. And so, I've had a lot of people make the comment when they first saw IQ Agent a couple of years ago that I was very, very much ahead of the times. And I was, but I was still selling. One of the things about IQ Agent that, and I'm obviously very passionate about it, is I don't have any investment money at all. I've never taken an investment dollar. I've run the company on sales, which is really the litmus test of a business model. Is it saleable? Will people buy it? Will they continue to buy it? And yes, they do. And that's something I'm pretty proud of, but it also speaks to, again, return on investment for the plant floor, because the plant floor doesn't have money to go spend on flashy stuff. There's only certain times that they can buy. I've got an automotive customer that the only time they can spend money is when they're building a new car model. That's the only time they get money. So I'm not going to just walk in there and sell something like this.
Yeah. But, so I remember you giving me a demo originally, and I think the architecture was like, it was like a kind of a web server that there was a web configuration page, and I think it was pulling data via OPC. Is it that still same major architecture?
We've expanded. We're constantly upgrading the product, but there is the configuration tool where you create your points of interest. And a point of interest is really any piece of equipment or any area in your plant that you have data that represents it. So it could be a motor or whatever. But we have a configuration tool where you create a point of interest. We can get data over OPC-DA, which is the old style classic, UA, which is the new, as well as ODBC. And we have some of the new things that we've added are what we call workflow or forms. So, think of a data entry form where you're doing a preventative maintenance procedure or you're reporting a problem. We have a drag and drop where you can literally create a procedure and associate it, to a POI in minutes. The people who are regularly filling out the forms, it's so easy to use it that they can create the forms as well. And then another thing that we've added for the Microsoft HoloLens is what we call augmented reality procedures, where you can put on the HoloLens, and we use floating videos, text, animated objects, and tools to walk someone through a task. It's like somebody's, pointing out, hey, here's what to do. And, we developed that for one of our major customers. And we're really looking to, to get it onto the HoloLens too, but while HoloLens 2 has been released, there's only about 70 or 80 of those actually out in the wild. And I think, so we're all kind of waiting on that thing to drop. Plus there's some really exciting hardware coming out, Third Eye, which is, it looks like a ski goggle. And it's supposed to be very similar to the HoloLens. It doesn't have the width. And there's a few other players that are coming out. So I really think augmented reality is going to start taking off. People see the ROI. I think Apple's going to jump into the game probably next year. Okay. So as we're, you know, we're constantly moving, you know, that we get increases in software and then increases in hardware.
And, yeah, they've already integrated all that technology into Apple for AR and Animojis and 3D depth sensing and all that.
Can you imagine seeing that, you know, 10 years ago? Or you imagine seeing the iPhone X when the first iPhone came out? It's crazy.
And then you give it to people, and then the first thing they do with it is go make a poop Animoji. I mean... I'm guilty. Okay. So, a couple of questions. Have you thought about looking at MQTT protocol, specifically SparkPlug B specification?
Yeah. We're actually going to implement that as well as a few others. OPC UA goes a long way, and most of the customers that we have, and you know, I don't have hundreds of customers, but pretty much every customer I have is a household name. They're global, you know, players or big companies. Yeah. And so most of them, you know, are not using MQTT yet out on the plant floor, but it's something that we want to do. And then there's a few other protocols that we're going to do. So we're definitely going to add that. I'm just kind of waiting on the justification to do so.
Okay.
And we also want to do, you know, some, you know, the thing is, and I gave a talk at Georgia Tech last year on this, but it's a marriage between mobility, IoT, and augmented reality. Right. And the fourth is going to be wearable technology, because augmented reality
and
is
5G too.
Well, yeah, 5G for the bandwidth. Yeah, because augmented reality is only cool on a mobile tablet. I'm still holding my hand. So what good is a procedure if my hands are encumbered? If you think about it, that's true. Glasses. A lot of people don't like me to say that. But it only really comes of age on a wearable device like a RealWear HMT1 or a HoloLens or some of these others that are coming out. But it's four technologies that are going to drive this. It's going to be, you know, mobile, you know, mobility technology, augmented reality, IoT, which makes the data available, and then wearables. And right now, I think the trade situation with China is kind of stalling us out a little bit. I think that's probably... affected the HoloLens too, and I think it's probably affected, you know,
the HoloLens also, or the HoloLens too?
No, just the two. The HoloLens, actually, they're not selling it anymore. I don't believe you can actually buy a new HoloLens version 1 anymore. I've tried. And the HoloLens 2, I think the factors there is, number one, they had about 5 times the demand that they thought they were going to have.
Wow.
And a few other things. I know some people that know stuff.
Well, think about this. Imagine police officers just driving around. I mean, this is kind of an obvious example that just pops up, is like just looking at people's license plates, contextual information, like, you know, I mean, imagine looking at the stoplight and seeing how many seconds are left before it before it turns green, or, you know, you could just click go green.
I know we're running out of time here for me, but let me give you another example. And I was having a discussion with someone in a large automation company, and I was showing him the HoloLens, and I could tell that he was mildly amused, but not really that impressed. And, you know, he said, well, okay, so what are you going to use the HoloLens for? And why is it good? And why do you think it's cool? And I said, well, you know, my wife bought me this very expensive TV a couple years ago. And it's HD and it's really big, but I can only use it sitting in a certain room of my house looking at a certain wall. I said, but if I put the HoloLens on, I can have a full HD TV hanging on every wall of my house, and I can walk around and I can see different things. And, you know, and he said, well, okay, that's great. You can see TVs. And I said, okay, here's my point. Take television out of that sentence and put in industrial panel. And tell me what impact that this technology is going to have on the plant floor.
Yeah, it's not like you have to, I need another touch panel here.
Boom. And you, not only that, but, you know, you could have your controls directly in context of the real world. You'd never have to really wire another panel.
Let me ask you this. Why, I mean, I guess there's still obvious reasons why we still need to be somewhat connected to the real world. But, like, I think most of those operations might be going virtual, and things that are actually physical are, like, if there's actually a physical need for someone to be there, like to like replace a motor or, you know, like what, you know, pull a fuse or I don't know, maybe there'll be smart fuses that just do that. Like why even physically be there still?
Well, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of plants that are what they call lights out plants or gray plants, where they have a very minimal staff, and we're always going to have the need for people. However, yeah. If you think about it, there's probably a ton of people that could be doing something else. I don't want to say gotten rid of, because that always people worry about, hey, you're taking my job and stuff. But technology is never really completely, taken out.
One thing that I've always thought was weird is, like, in Southern California, there's hundreds of little water districts, and they all pretty much, they all have their nuances, and, obviously main breaks and meter checking is going for, digital, but they need a maintenance staff, right? But the operations, they're operating from a SCADA room. I never really understood why there wasn't just some consistency and just some virtual operations where one or two operators can manage a fleet of different, systems and then remotely dispatch, just a smarter, more efficient way to do it. Cause I've always seen it as very inefficient.
No reason they can't do that. And there's, and the thing is that you get into, we've always done it this way. Of course we need an operator. If you've ever been in, the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority, has got a big place here in Chattanooga, and they've got 16 operators that can virtually run all 31 hydroelectric dams that are in the southeast. And they have their own, climatologist, and they're sitting and they've slowly, gotten to that model where you can do that kind of stuff. And there's no reason. It's just, you got to put the technology in.
As opposed to having each one of those 31 plants operate like its own plant with a local crew and local SCADA and no intelligence.
Yeah. And they're still kind of talking back and forth. And there are crews at those plants. But I think that if you really took, I think a lot of the manufacturing today, if you restructure it like you suggest, where you can have remote monitoring and you can have people that are one level above and looking at all the plants, things like that. Of course, you can make it a lot more efficient, but there's training involved there and there's technology involved there. And I think 5G is going to make a lot of that happen, just because it's going to give us the control and the bandwidth, things like that.
Yeah. Well, that'd be really exciting. What do you think is, I know you said ROI, but what do you think the major hurdles right now are for VR and AR? More specifically AR, because I know that's what you more so focus on.
Yeah. Well, for manufacturing, one of the, I have yet to show IQ Agent to someone in manufacturing who said, I don't even see a need for that. They all get excited. Now, they may not, a lot of it is infrastructure. We don't have good wireless. Okay. Well, that kills mobility until you can get that. Surprisingly, the biggest barrier that I've run into to date is they'll say something along the lines of, our documents aren't organized. And so, we've got some here and some there, and we're still using paper. And so in order for us to really effectively use your system, we would have to, get all our documents and organize them and get them up in SharePoint.
They need an asset model or just some hierarchy of.
Yeah, and they don't want to do that. And I try to explain to them, look, that's costing you a lot of money. The fact that you can't lay your hand on the correct document when the line's down is really a bad situation, but it's, the devil you know. And so, now the larger plants, the bigger customers I'm doing business with don't have that problem. They're already organized, but you would be surprised at how many. I think when I came in, you guys were talking about some plants not even being Industry 2.0. They're still, they don't have the infrastructure in place. So infrastructure is a big one. The other thing too is it's still relatively new. And, and like I said, AR really is going to bring the ROI when wearable technology is out there.
Are you finding the cost of the HoloLens 2 being, what does that run? And is that a factor or has that come down low enough?
HoloLens 2, they either will sell it to you for $3,500 or you can rent it for, it's a pretty good hit. Now the RealWear, I think the list is around $2,000, but you can get a version of that that's ATEC Class 1 to 2. But the thing is, the larger companies,
that's not an issue.
That doesn't bother them. I'm working with several companies. I mean, one company I'm working with bought 200 of these RealWears at one go. So, it's a consideration, but if you really balance it against the ROI that they're going to get, I think the bean counters that are really paying attention can say, yeah, okay, this is going to pay for itself fairly quickly.
Well, we already justify $1,000 devices per operator.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, there was an automotive customer that I was working with when I first showed IQ Agent. They were one of my first customers, but I was in with the vice president of manufacturing, and I was nervous. It's really my first big pitch, and I went through IQ Agent. I showed it to him. We were at a university, and he said, "Bob, it's amazing. It's great technology. We'll never use this." And I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Well, I don't know if you've ever been in an automotive plant." I had. He said, "But there's this huge sign that said there's no cameras or recording devices allowed." And I said, "Well, sir, I've been to your plant, and everybody there's got an iPhone 5 in their back pocket with very high quality video recording." So I said, "I didn't see a box where they put them. They have them." And he goes, "Well, yeah." And I said, "So that means that either that rule doesn't actually mean anything, or the ROI they get out of having that phone is worth the cost. But it's one of those. They actually changed the rule. They actually said, okay, well, we're going to allow this. You just can't, you can't just go record anywhere you want." And so I think that this, shows a lot of the manufacturing, they are embracing technology. When I first got into, industrial automation, they would never use Windows, and then, okay, we use Windows, but we're not using a wireless network because it's too dangerous walking around. Well, okay, wireless, but no laptops. Well, okay, laptops, but no phones. So now we got phones. So I think that, they are embracing technology and they can see the ROI out of it. And you get, these younger generations that have grown up with mobile phones and places in the business where they can make decisions. And so they're receptive to this technology. And I think 5G comes out and the wearables comes out, it's really going to get huge, and it's exciting times.
It's interesting because it's so true what you're saying about, especially the industry companies and especially like public sector utilities that are especially slow to adopt technology because they don't want to take the risk. And two, it's really not their money. So they're, more reserved to like invest into something. But we're at this inflection point where like these technologies are not costing huge capital amounts, but they're more, maybe they're subscription model licensing and they can, like you said, rent the HoloLens and it's a subscription service to the AR technology. And now they're getting it day one and saving value day one, driving ROI. So
that's a really good point. And one of the ways that we address that, because that's another big barrier, is if you go for, hey, I'm going to do an AR pilot and we're going to do it on the HoloLens, well, then they're going to buy the HoloLens and they're either going to, buy the subscription or they're going to get a developer. And at the end of, quite a bit of money, they're going to have one unit that somebody can do one thing with one machine on, and then they got to do that. With IQ Agent, the approach that we've taken is I can create a point of interest and immediately it works on an iPhone 4. It works on any Android phone. It works on a tablet. If you want AR, then bring an AR device. It works on that too. That way I can go and say, hey, look, if you're doing this AR pilot, even if it doesn't work out with a HoloLens right now, everybody can use all the devices they have. And so you're guaranteed ROI because we work with that as well. And that's actually worked out pretty well for us.
And how does that, is that licensing on a per user or like an app base or?
Device. Yeah, it's by device. So basically when we sell a license, we don't limit the amount of points of interest or anything. You can actually just come out with a new demo license where you can have three devices and you can create a certain amount of POIs. But when our customers buy one, they can create as many POIs and forms and procedures, and then they buy a license for each device they want to connect to, and then we sell them in packs, 5, 10.
How does the points of interest, you said there are QR codes, right?
Well, they're represented by QR codes. It's just a very quick way to, because it's a proven technology, so it's very easy. Every phone's got a scanner. You can scan it. But on the HoloLens, you don't even use a QR code because you can place world anchors and it maps. Same thing with, I think where AR kit's going. you know, there's several, you know, when you're doing AR, you have to know where you're at and you have to know something about your environment.
Yeah. I'm just wondering the POI, you know, that let's say we use IQHN and I have the POIs, are those POIs open in a sense that that connection of that QR code to that asset, I can take to another piece of software if I wanted, or like it's just an ID, or how does that information work? Is it proprietary?
Basically the point of interest, the QR code resolves to identify that point of interest, but it could be adapted into other systems. Now they would have to, you know, have a license to do that, but I've got customers that, you know, they want to scan a POI, and then when they pull up, you know, hey, here's a problem, they want to enter something and they want it to go into their trouble reporting software. And see, everything's open on the back end, so it's all sitting in SQL Server. And so I've got customers that are integrating with, you know, trouble reporting systems and work order systems and things like that. So we keep it pretty open, you know, to do it. It's just if they've got, if they've got something that's communicating with IQAgent, then that's counted as one of the licenses. They just have to buy a license to do it.
I guess that's a good question. Is there an open standard for, you know, asset, you know, tracking like QR codes that would enable technologies like IQAgent or any type of, you know, kind of like open standard is what I'm saying. Like, and then you could adapt to that if you wanted to, because basically what I'm thinking of is, and not saying that your software is not great, but like, let's say someone did want to implement that though, they would feel confident knowing that they wouldn't be locked into IQAgent for that asset tracking model. Or is that the part that they're paying for, is the link between, you know, the camera, the asset, and the QR code itself?
Well, with IQAgent, you're paying for the ability to, you know, basically create a POI that's global, and you can, you know, you can scan it and get the information. And so that's what our software does. Okay. There are standards around QR codes and things like that. I don't think there's a standard to do. Actually, I have two patents on the technology that we use to do that. But there are standards around QR codes and how they represent, but I haven't really looked too hard into it.
I'm just asking questions. QR. Yeah. The spark plug specification would be really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if you could put that into
on my plate, you know, and there's a lot of cool technologies out there. And usually, you know, I've been talking to some oil and gas, you know, customers, about different technologies that they use to get data, and they, you know, they've got some XML stuff and they've got some MQTT stuff. So there's a lot out there to do that we can embrace.
Looks like my next guest is running a bit late. Do you have more time to talk, or?
Sure.
So let's talk about system integration and how system integration is transforming along with Industry 4.0, and what are some of the changes that you're seeing?
I'm seeing a lot of new companies that are getting into the control and visualization space that used to be pretty much taken up by companies like Wonderware and Siemens and Rockwell. You've got some stuff from GRU and Opto22 and Ignition. And the idea had went from, you know, when Wonderware and a few of the first SCADA providers came out, you know, they would have these systems, and then they got bigger and bigger. And so it automatically went to, now we all have these huge systems that you do your PLC stuff and your network stuff and your SCADA stuff, and it does big. Well, IoT and the idea of IoT kind of gets you back into, you know, thinking small and being able to add data without having to go in and change your automation system. And I think these companies have said, you know what? What if I sell you a box, and it's very easy to do a quick HMI and a quick visualization? It's very easy to do anything, and you can just go bang something out. Well, I think the industry has really responded to that, because those guys are still around and they're competing in a big way with the big companies. So I think we've come full circle. And, you know, what was old is new again. And in places in plant where, you know, everybody I work with has a SCADA, but they're also looking at the Raspberry Pi, you know, to run these, you know, banners and dashboards. And they're looking at things like Ignition and Groove and things like that. So that's one of the things.
I'm actually going to go to Opto 22 next week, or no, the week after next.
to see some very interesting stuff. My partner Pat's been playing with a lot of their stuff. He's been blathering at me nonstop about it, so I got to be able to look at it.
Hey, well, thanks, Bob. Thanks for joining the podcast, man.
Hey, Zach, it's always good to talk to you, man. I'm glad to hear you're doing well. And John, I'm going to let you get away, man.
I remember
thanks, Bob.
The second day after I had quit my job, it was like Daily Z episode number 2, and you had commented, you're like, you know, Godspeed, and seems like yesterday, you know, so thanks, man.
I'm impressed, and I think you're doing well. All right, man. Talk to you later.
Peace.
All right, bye-bye.